Congratulations!
You're listening to Congratulations Pine Tree, the Bay's number one arts and culture podcast with me, Kay Rhodes.
And me, Maysoon Wazwaz.
We're out here in beautiful Oakland, California, talking to artist, educator, performer, everything really, Beatrice L. Thomas, a.k.a. Black Benatar.
You got it.
Right? Okay,
yeah.
Awesome. I just was wondering if you have, right, this is my first question because it's most pressing to my mind. How do you perform? Do you not have anxiety about getting up on stage? And if so, how do you deal with it?
I mean, yes, I have anxiety. I used to say before Woody Allen was a total creep, like before we all knew. Like
we kind of all knew, but then it really came out and we were like,
I'm living in my past traumas and I'm not going to acknowledge it. And then you could not. But before then, I used to say that Woody Allen was my spirit animal. People don't assume because I really come in such a exciting package for people. They really do not like to afford me social anxiety or shyness or any of that. Mm-mm. And I am nothing but a ball of nerves. I think I care so much about everything that I do. I care so much. So artist hat, now I'm going to put all the consultant hats. I once got feedback after a consulting event in the evaluation that someone said, Beatrice's only problem is that she cares too much.
Wow.
And I was like,
is that a problem?
I don't know.
That's
like a positive feedback. And then I just leaned into it and I was like, you know what? Yeah, I do. Like, yes, I care so very much. And so it's very nerve-wracking because I also feel like I'm responsible for, like, every woman, every black person, every black woman, every queer person, every queer black person, every queer black female identified queer, you know, all of those things. Just, it's like a running, and then there's, like, all kinds of guilt that is in there, like, you know. Like, white guilt affects everybody. I got it, too. Why? I don't know. It's horrible. But yes, totally, totally nerve-wracking and anxiety and just, but a lot of practice at performance. And I don't actually perform because I love performing. I love sharing thoughts and opinions with an audience in like the performance medium. Like I build things in real time as a artist. That is so much like improv and letting, you know, body mind flow happen is so much a part of how I channel. So it's just what I have to deal with, you know.
Yeah.
As well as fighting with people saying like, no, I am socially anxious.
And something, an article I'd read, you talked about coming from like a lineage of pastors and performers, doctors and healers, which I was like, oh, that clearly has influenced or inspired some of your trajectory today.
I grew up between two Southern families, the Thomases and the Dennefields, and both my mom and dad sort of escaped the South. I don't know like really what that means. They got to Baltimore, so can I really escape? I don't think so. But they're both from really southern parts. If my mom's from Callahan, Florida, which is the northern part of Florida, which if you know Florida, that is really where the South lives in Florida. Yeah. And my dad is from Virginia, and his people are still owners of the land that his lineage were slaves on.
Oh, wow.
So like long history. And then so my grandfather on both sides were both pastors. My dad also became a reverend. My mom is a psychiatrist. So that was, I'm a useful friend to have. Or annoying, one or the other.
What kind of psychiatrist?
I mean, she came from the like Freudian family, but she ultimately is a new age psychologist. She had the first, one of the first, and I don't know, integrated practices when I was growing up, I mean, she had a iridologist, which is someone who checks out your eyes to healing, an acupuncturist and a massage therapist in her office. And she did, you know, medical MD psychiatry stuff. So, I mean, she's definitely into all kinds of different types of healing and meditation, and she's a cool lady. She's like a weird old, not old, I mean, sorry, Mom. She's like a stately 70-year-old, stately 70-year-old, just really accomplished healer, you know? And so despite myself, I grew up in the church. I mean, I didn't grow up in the church, right. but church is like a big thing in Southern Black families. So I was just like in the church a lot, and there was just a lot of catching the spirit. Yeah. There's a lot of like, I remember the cadence of, you know, call and response, and like
there's a lot of like performative elements, major, or like what's taken from. Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. And that is in me, even though it's like annoying, because religion is annoying to me, mostly because of what people do with it. Mm-hmm. You know, like I totally recognize that for like my family, when I see my family and the way that they engage religion, I understand it's like connection of how it was a survival mechanism, like to get through antebellum slavery. You know, I get that. But man, people do some effed up stuff in the name of religion. And it's just like, to me, it's wildly unchecked. I recently had a palm reading that yes, and it said I was like, I should like think about a religious pathway.
Really?
Yeah, and I was like, are you serious?
You're like, no. I was like, no.
You're kidding
me. You cannot be reading my
mind. Turn the other hand.
Stop it. But I actually just had Black Benatar get her Unitarian, or her like universal.
Oh.
Universalist.
What is that called? To be able to marry
reverendship. I can
officially.
Are you
going to marry somebody?
I married two queer dogs recently in Portland.
Amazing.
That is what prompted me to get, you know, ordained.
Your piece, I feel bad saying this, but I've never seen you live yet, which is like a crying shame, because I wanted to try to go to your piece. You had the variety show this year at
you
Brava.
Have another chance,
right? Is it coming up? You have another coming up?
Yeah, so
right, you're not like doing every couple weeks or every month or week, whatever.
I'm old. and those queens are like, oh, I'm still working on like my number that I've just performed every year, like to larger and larger audiences.
Yeah,
so I'm just like, make a political
is that the change piece? Is gonna come
change piece? Is gonna come.
Mm-hmm. That piece is amazing.
I really like thinking of Black Benatar, and I think this is like the where she falls into this performance object, right? And so those pieces, the ones that I'm create, I am sort of cultivating them and slowly moving those into some sort of work that I will work a narrative around. And then I have Black Benatar's Black Magic Cabaret, which is the piece that premiered, it's a work in progress, last year at Brava. And we put that together in about like 3 weeks of like sort of boots on the ground. I've been thinking about it for a really long time, and I had people in mind for it. And so I worked with Stephen LeMay, who's an incredible physical actor, comedic actor, and then John Calden, who's an incredible writer and just very...
John Calden from City Hall, John? Love him.
Oh my God. He's like my director, collaborator, like soulmate person.
That is the best.
I mean, that I would say that I have two. One is Kevin Seaman. The other one is John Calden.
Okay.
Oh, wait, will you, for listeners who haven't been to the show, do you want to say a little bit about it?
Black Benatar's Black Magic Cabaret is a romp through white allyship as told in a sort of meta story. There's a cabaret of QT POC and queer artists that pepper the night, And then the narrative is between the host of the show and their assistant, mm-hmm. Wyatt Ally.
I love it. Oh my God, it's so good.
And so during the show, the MC and magician, Black Benatar, the drag queen, plays the straight woman, and Stephen LeMay, a non-makeup for once, is playing the buffoon. And so we're trying to kind of invert the minstrel paradigm a bit, mm-hmm. and really talk about allyship in cross-cultural relationships, specifically really looking at like Black folks descendant of antebellum Southern slavery, and just like the challenges mm-hmm. of these kinds of friendships where people really, really want to help and support, but because they're not skilled in what it is to ally, they miss all of the cues that could lead to like deeper and richer engagement. And I do that. I weave that through with like, you know, magic tricks.
So good.
And like, you know, participatory engagement, like singing together and just different ways of trying to engage. I call it racial edging. Show. It's like racial edging for a magical crowd.
Maisu, do you know what edging is?
I don't know if I know what edging is.
It's when like someone's about to orgasm.
Okay, because all of a sudden it's like, is this sexual now?
Right, and totally then they don't.
Oh,
right, like staying always on the edge of orgasm. Mm-hmm. Right, yeah.
Yeah, that's the like very gender expansive version. It's like also gay men be hella dank and they like to do the edging where they like go, keeping themselves till the edge and then they back it down. And you come right up to the edge and you back it down. Right, and it's so I'm taking
racial edging. Okay, now I'm like trying to understand it in now, this other context.
Let me scoot you over. Is Thank that you. Like ultimately like help? I think that so much like in our like racial dialogues are really they go awry because I think that like non-Blacks, and again I'm talking about Black folks, antebellum slavery. Though I think that there are some very broad overlaps around just oppression, right? Mm-hmm. But I think that part of it is that, you know, dominant paradigm or colloquially white folk have no muscles built up in terms of resiliency around racial pressure, mm-hmm. dialogues equal pressure, psychological pressure or discomfort, right? Like yeah. There's no tolerance. And so I'm just really find myself always being like, just like relax, like it's okay, right? You can also just say you don't know, right? Don't try to answer, white people. If someone tries to get you in a question, just say you don't know.
I don't know.
Like, I don't know. And I'm not even sure what I should. Anyway, no, my point is that there's not a lot of like resilience around just like holding like just race, tolerating it yeah. in the room as a topic without feeling so squirrely around it. And so I wanted to devise like a kind of ridiculous, it's ridiculous, the narratives in between are, you know, we use physical comedy, like we use magic, right? It's just, they're spectacle as a way of like, really like pushing for certain understandings around like nuanced dynamics, stuff mm-hmm. that gets uncomfortable, mm-hmm. and then backing us down with like a collective activity like singing, mm-hmm. like actively demonstrating like, hey, we can literally be super uncomfortable without a resolution around something and still like be together as a community, right? Like, or that at least that's what I hope I'm laying some foundation for. And that's what I am working off of currently is racial edging. You know?
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that.
You see, so you wait, see how it relates?
I'm like, okay. New terms. Like, I
so
into
wait,
it.
When's your next so upcoming performance?
April 18th.
That's my birthday.
Oh my God, happy birthday. I just want you to know. I did it for you. I was like, brava, I need April 18th as a date.
That'll be my birthday gift. Awesome.
It's like... gonna be turning an age.
I wanted to ask, just this is something that is on my mind. I work at the Arts Commission, as you know, and we're doing a lot of work around racial equity and just the whole agency and how that's impact, or how we can bring that into all of our program areas. Mm-hmm. And just thinking about your cabaret, like, do you, is that something you want to keep like in a theater on a stage, or are you interested in like bringing it to like organizations who are trying to do some work around these issues? Like, is that, I don't know if that's, that seems kind of weird, but like, I'm just sort of curious.
I don't think it's weird. I think that, you know, the piece that is in development currently, and this piece is in development, so we're just talking like conceptual map out, is the cultural equity cabaret, which takes like, so in my day job as a consultant, I do, you know, implicit bias training. I've developed a transgender allyship training, you know, mitigating bias in organizations. Like, so this is all work that is definitely in my wheelhouse and that I'm creating in this sort of one aspect of, you know, life. And so I really would love to, you know, bring those two things together. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, I don't know. It's like I have these PowerPoints and I feel like I have like, you know, drag. Like, yeah. So it just, I think it's just going to be for a while just sort of me messily slapping the two together until I figure out what it means. Yeah. You know, I've been working on trying to really identify like what is an enjoyable process for making for me that can contain my anxiety. It's when like I am alone and we're not engaging in a collaborative process that like, you know, all the anxiety, all the other records get to playing and they get louder and they drown it out. So the first time I pulled together the team and we were sort of writing it based on like three key meetings. So now that's the case, and I'm like, I don't want to just constantly keep, I don't know, what's my next piece? So we sent everything, we recorded everything, and we just sent everything off. We're getting it transcribed. So the piece really came together through like sort of sketch comedy, little writing spaces. It's all outlined. And then it was all improv on the stage. We captured it. Now we're getting it transcribed. And then I'm going to go be meeting with another set of like 3 weeks, 4 week period to cobble the script out. And then I'll learn the script, and that will be, it'll be another work in progress, but it'll be the first time of like really taking the script from the improv, like grabbing the jokes we like, cutting out pieces that we're like, that's trash, and just seeing how that goes. Like, you know, those parts where the pin drops, you're just like, that joke didn't land. Yeah, like, oh, I think it's so fun. I'm loving this process, which is why I was, you know, sharing it, is that like, it allows, it's like the writing, you know, writing provides so much anxiety, right? The page can become like this, like it may be blank, but it's just a sea, it's a white sea of shouting voices, right? It's like not really blank. It's just like, wah, 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 you can't write, what do you think? Who are you to deserve to make art? You shouldn't, da, 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 da. But if I can like get some trick
those voices,
skip it, like just skip the whole writing thing and be like, oh boo, I got a pile of text now, so I guess you lose.
You're like, I'm gonna get around this,
right? You gotta game the brain.
Yes,
game the brain.
I love that. I wanted to ask you what your dream stage would be for performing, either for like the venue itself or for like the people who might be showing up there that you can like impact. Or
this is going to sound funny, like I don't know that I have dream, I don't know that I have a dream stage. I have a dream state, like a state of being that I want to be in.
Sure.
And I have a lot of dreams, like this performance dream feels like something that like was an inevitability inside of me. Like it was just, you know, performance art is like, and my dad was an actor, so I didn't really want to like go to the stage. I am a fine artist by like graduate schooling and a director by bachelor degreeing. And like, I studied theater, and my dad was a actor. He recently showed me a recent scene of his in a film. Gosh, I really, The Hitter. Don't mess with The Hitter. It's like a 70s blaxploitation film. Yeah, it's on the internet. My dad was like, my film is now playing on the internet, which is...
Was he the hitter?
Sweet. He was not the hitter. There was like a more famous, but not as amazing black actor that I don't know his name, but my father played the shoeshine guy. I keep forgetting the question. I always I forgot it too. I just talk a lot.
Oh, dream state.
Oh, okay. I wanted to be a land artist. Like, my fantasy is to be a land artist. And it was just, I could not figure out. That felt like something. I did a land arts program at the University of Texas at Austin. And I studied all these dudes. But it just was like, I could not figure out where my in was. Like, I did not have the money, the pedigree, or the dudeliness, like, to make it happen. I still think it might happen. So I feel like my dream state may be realized when, like, I have, like, a series of touring queer artists who are touring Europe and the United States that I'm, you know, facilitating their tours. When I get to tour maybe like once every 3 years with the show, or once every 5 years with a new show. And when in between those times I'm working on like a large land piece. That's a dream state, right? Like in New Mexico, wearing all denim, perhaps a red hanky around my neck and a cowboy hat. I mean, it was not going to be a cowboy hat. Let's be real.
What would you make?
I love that bee.
I would likely, I mean, it's the same thing. So I've been making land art pieces for a while, and I studied textile design in school. I got an MFA in interdisciplinary design, and so textiles was sort of my medium. And I think that I would say that I would like weave the landscape, or I would crochet the landscape, or I would thread the landscape, or I would pattern the landscape. I would do some measure of applying a principle of handcraft conceptually to a landscape to sort of investigate scale.
You're a really hardcore crocheter.
I am a hardcore crocheter, just for sure.
How do you crochet with the land?
I mean, so once, I mean, I would say like I had a project that kind of ruined my knees. But anyway, a lot of squatting. But there was a small creek, and it was like a crack in the land, but it was, you know, water running through it. Like, and so I spent a number of days lacing the creek. So taking twine and using little spikes, and then lacing the creek. Wow. So creating like a twine bridge.
I love that.
Over the creek. I can't remember what my like thesis was about it, but it was something about sewing the landscape back together.
Yes. Like, you know. I've never thought about the idea of a marriage between queer craft and land art. And that seems like,
you know, no one else had, which is why this is like it's been 150 years ago. Like there wasn't, I felt like when I was in Austin trying to crack the, you know, arts, the fine arts, visual arts code, and I worked in galleries and all that, you know, there wasn't enough work. There wasn't like enough queer work, radical craft work that was engaging queerness. There just wasn't enough, there was no conversation, and I didn't really overlap, right? There's like a very strong like ethno location in my work, and so it's just there wasn't a dialogue to be had. And so now I'm unearthing some of my older work, and it's like there's now dialogues, like, yeah. There's, you know, people to talk about it. And so that's actually inspiring me to like look at what sort of project I can do in terms of public art.
Hell yeah.
You know, Oh, I like how serious you are.
Crochet the Grand Canyon.
That's like how I'm talking. This is what I'm talking about. Like, I mean, also, can we talk about like Christo and Jean-Claude and how like bunk that shit is? Like, like it's always there's a woman behind that shit, right? I'm just like, how do these men live with themselves? Like, oh, it's probably better that it's only my name and I get all the recognition for years. We'll just wait until 150 years go by and then we'll reveal it. Like, ugh. It just is so bothersome to me. It just is frustrating to see it, the patriarchy play out in front of you your whole life.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
In the art world. Mm-hmm. Why do we do?
Okay, we always at the end of an interview, we like to ask the interviewee if there is anything else you would like listeners to know. Like if we didn't, you know, bring up something that you really wanted to talk about, or if you just have something you want to like plug coming up or anything like that.
It is really a challenge, like to hold all the things we want to do. And I think that it's very easy to get like caught up in the thinking of things, and we kind of talk ourselves out of things before we actually get to step one. And I have been practicing, and I think I can't remember who, some guru, I'm sure, but like I've been practicing the first 15, right? Which is like in the first 15 seconds mm-hmm. of like the time that you have like a stroke of genius or an idea, is to like do something to make it manifest for yourself. Mm. And like right now what I've been doing is like making a document. So starting a document, and it's just like anything really. It could be like a cool new project, or it could be just this thing that you've needed to do. But I'm making a Google Doc because I'm realizing for my own practice, like I'm using Google Docs, and what it's done for me in terms of like, just start the project, even like start copying and pasting information, like do a little research, copy and paste information from your research into a note, right? But something that says you've already started the project, because the hard part is the starting. So if you can game your brain into like having started it, it just allows your brain to work on it. It's now like it's already going in your subconscious. So the hard part of like getting started has been kind of scooted around. So I would say like your first 15, right? Your first 20, whatever works for you. But just like have a practice of like getting something down before your inner critic starts to open its mm-hmm. big, stupid, slimy mouth, mushing and all. Don't do that. I call it the inner worm. The inner worm is like, don't bother. Stop. Like, that's my. That's another career I've yet to start, which is my voiceover career.
Yeah, you will be.
That's going to be great.
Number one. Okay. Okay. Thank you so much for chatting with us today and being so generous with your time and thoughts. And as always, congratulations.
Pineapple.
Oh, from the bridge to the other bridge to the island in between, this has been Congratulations, Pine Tree.